32 minutes past the hour. Friday morning, good to be with you. September 7th, 2007. And all this week long, we've been taking a closer look at the life and the spirituality of Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and having the opportunity to talk to a lot of you about your thoughts and your reflections on this week, as so much misinformation and misinterpretation of Mother Teresa's journey is reported in the secular press. Many of you are talking from your heart about what it means, and that's why I wanted to continue the conversation, actually wrap up the week talking about this with someone who had a very unique experience throughout her life with Mother Teresa, Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta. Donna Marie Cooper O'Boyle has been on with us many times before, and she is a regular on the program now doing her Mom's Corner segment. And she has had correspondence with Mother Teresa, and Mother Teresa even endorsed her book, which was written a while ago but just recently published, Prayerfully Expecting. And so I wanted to get Donna's take on this situation with Mother Teresa and what's being said about her in the secular press versus what Donna Marie feels is on her heart about what she learned from Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta. And on Wednesday, of course, we marked 10 years of her passing and Mother Teresa's passing. Donna, good to have you on the program.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Teresa.
And I know that you've written about this on your blog, and we'll get to your website and that address in just a minute. But what are your thoughts as we wrap up the week? And there's been an awful lot of coverage on this issue the last couple of days, especially.
Oh, I know. It's unbelievable. First of all, it's hard to believe 10 years have gone by since she left this planet here. So that's really amazing right there. But, you know, a book that was written that was meant to bring hope is being, you know, distorted by the secular media, which is what they like to do. And it's a shame, but we have to kind of expect that, too. So I think the Time magazine article a lot of people were referring to with the new book, Come Be My Light by Doubleday. Mm-hmm. And that was a book I'm sure meant to bring hope to people. And instead, it's, you know, the secular media is saying that Mother Teresa lost her faith. And they say newly published letters reveal a beloved icon's 50-year crisis of faith. Well, we know her experience was not a crisis of faith, but a dark night of the soul. And that was a phrase, you know, coined by St. John of the Cross, who also experienced it. And I'm not sure if you spoke on this, because I've been really busy, so I haven't had a chance to catch everything you've been talking about, but a preacher from the pontifical household commented on it. Have you mentioned that yet?
Oh, Father Cantala Mesa?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have, but go ahead and mention it again, because I think what he said is extremely insightful.
Well, he just said, Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta's dark night of the soul kept her from being a victim of the media age and exalting herself. So it's just one of his comments. And the way I look at it, Mother Teresa never lost her faith, because she put one foot in front of the other each day to go out once again to serve the poorest of the poor. And to me, that's hardly a sign of someone who had lost her faith. She was someone immersed in prayer always, and she was constantly drawing her sisters, brothers, priests, and anyone who would listen to ever closer to Jesus in the Blessed Sacrament, who was waiting, thirsting for visits from us. So she constantly drew people to Jesus. Now, someone who didn't have faith, I hardly think that they would be doing that on every day of her life since, you know, she became a nun.
Right. Now, how did you get to know her and to meet her?
Well, I met her about almost 20 years ago in Washington, D.C. when I was down there for a visit, and we were invited by the nuns to come back to their private mass the following day. And that's the day that Mother Teresa walked into the chapel for mass when we were there, my children and I. And that was what started the whole thing out. It was just a beautiful encounter with her right after the mass, where she hugged my older daughter, Sheldaya, and then she came to me and asked if Jessica was the one singing at mass, because she was a little bit fussy. And we had a beautiful conversation. And then I was so drawn to her and to her spirituality, which I had already been, but just being in her presence was so amazing. And I don't really know exactly how to explain that experience itself in a short period of time, but that drew me to write her a letter. I got permission from the Mother Superior, because I questioned whether I should or shouldn't. I didn't want to take up Mother Teresa's time, and I was encouraged to do so. So I did, and that started a correspondence, which really went on for almost 10 years, and I was very blessed to be in Mother Teresa's presence for about 12 or so times after that, and all her letters she sent to me over the years, there were 22 of them to be exact, and so much she taught me and prayed me through two pregnancies and read my writings I sent her and had her spiritual director go over them. So we just developed this beautiful friendship, and she was so busy with work all over the world, I hesitated to take from her time, but she, it just happened the way God wanted it to, and I believe so anyway, and I feel that there are so many blessings that I receive that I like to pass them on to mm-hmm. others through my writings. And
what can you share with us? You have 22 letters from Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Actually, yes, it is amazing, but I took them in stride. It's like they happened. I felt it was a grace from God. I felt it was a blessing, and I didn't try to get a big head over it or breath. I kept it kind of quiet for years, and now it's coming out now. But actually, those letters everything she's written is being scrutinized, I think, in the canonization process. So the sisters had asked me to send them copies of the letters, which they have at their in their research. They go through everything. But she did send me lots of, it's a lot of wisdom, family life, lots of blessings and lots of instruction and requests for prayers and promises of prayers and just everything she said, it just came at the exact right time, of course. And these are letters I treasure, I put aside, and, every so often I'll pull them out and see something that she said to me. I was looking at one earlier because someone asked me about it, and it was addressing a lay missionary of charity, what that person does, actually, because I am a lay missionary of charity, and she mm-hmm. wrote me a letter about that, explaining how it really is a way to satiate the thirst of Jesus on the cross. But I'm sorry, I wasn't very articulate here about her letters.
Oh, no, it's fine. You're probably just very moved when you think about the fact that you have these letters from her. What do you think you've learned most over the years in your correspondence with her and also just being in her presence and, going back to some of those letters as you have this week and glanced over them?
Well, one thing that strikes me a lot about her is, well, she didn't worry about anything going on around her. She never got involved in politics. She never got involved with anything but going straight to the matter at hand. She'd treat each individual on their own level. She went one by one by one, and that's how she took care of people. I mean, she would walk into an abortion clinic and take the girl out by the arm, not by force, but just to go over and actually be very, very proactive about it. She didn't just talk about ending abortion or not killing a life. She would go in and say, "Come on, why don't you come with me? I'll give you a hand here." And then she would talk the girl out of it, and help the girl or offer to take her baby and give it to a loving family. So she was very proactive in everything that she did, and she went one by one by one, everyone that God put into her within her reach. And she didn't worry about the masses of people. She was criticized, which was hard to believe, that she was criticized at times by some that would say, if you keep feeding them, they're not going to learn to take care of themselves. And she would say, well, I have to keep giving them the fish because they may not be strong enough to hold the rod. And when they're strong enough, they'll be able to do it. But she just believed that she needed to see Jesus within each and every person, and that's what she did. And she truly lived the gospel message of Matthew, of whatever you do to Jesus, you do, whatever you do to the others, you do to me, as Jesus told her. So that's what she lived by, that's what she taught, and nothing made her flinch. She has seen everything and has dealt with every kind of poverty and distress and just took care of it in the best way that she could. She took the dying off the streets just to give them a little few moments, even before they breathed their last breath, of dignity, of feeling loved by someone. And that was so important to her, to constantly surround people with love. And that was what drove her, the love of Christ, the thirst of Jesus on the cross. And she had that written in all of her chapels of all of her convents, I thirst.
Yeah, yeah. I remember a friend of mine who had been there, and he saw that too, and he commented on that. It just breaks my heart when people, you know, in the secular press or others are seeing this and saying that, oh, well, she's a hypocrite because she kept doing this stuff but didn't really, you know, she was struggling at the same time. And I'm thinking, you know, how shallow, you know, because if she didn't believe any of it, even though she was struggling at times, she took the time to write you. She took the time to encourage you. She didn't have to do that. She could have the Mother Superior or someone else write you a letter back or something. She certainly didn't have to write you 22 letters, you know, and then she just kept going. As one of my listeners said earlier this week, he said she just kept suiting up and showing up, and I thought that was a great way to put it.
She wanted to die on her feet, and she pretty much did. She never wanted to, she was not one to rest at all. She was, you know, constantly on the move, and that's true. She didn't need to do all that extra writing and extra things that she did late into the night, and every letter was filled with always words of encouragement. Always, she was constantly saying, you know, let your light shine, let Jesus's light shine through you, bring that joy to others, and it was a lot of times about joy and about the light. And so here, if she was a woman of darkness, she did have that dark night of the soul that she experienced. You know, she was the one bringing the light to others, and she actually even said, you know, if I'm ever going to be a saint, I'll probably be a saint of darkness, that I will come down, I'll spend more time, I'll be absent from heaven because I'll be down on earth trying to, you know, light the darkness. So it's pretty amazing how she did say that. And, you know, also, Teresa, feelings aren't a state of the soul.
Exactly.
Or a measurement of our...
Exactly.
You know, and Mother Teresa would be the first one to tell us that. And just because she suffered the feelings of abandonment by God and those feelings of emptiness doesn't mean at all that she lacked faith. And souls that are called by God to great holiness have much to suffer. And we've seen that throughout history with the lives of the saints. And I think because of the way she embraced the cross with passion and dignity... She never shirked from it. She never hid from the cross, but she rather surrendered to it entirely because she knew that's what God's holy will was for her, to take care of the poorest of the poor. And she wanted to do it perfectly and lovingly to please God. And she even said she wanted to do it more lovingly than it was ever done before because she loved him so much.
Mm.
And I think, too, that perhaps maybe God allowed Mother Teresa these deep feelings of abandonment by him, because she so totally embraced the cross and her love for the poor, and she became the poor herself. Remember, she owned nothing, she abandoned everything and just gave herself to God totally. So she was free in that she was totally poor, and wanting to live like the poor, she also experienced a lot of probably what they were going through, their losses, their feelings of being abandoned by society. And remember, too, Jesus' feelings of abandonment while he hung on the cross.
Right.
So if she was so united to him, it only makes sense that she would be allowed, as such a holy person, to feel these feelings that Jesus, you know, himself hanging from the cross when he was abandoned, because she prayed to satiate his thirst on the cross, his thirst for souls. So it makes a lot of sense to a Christian and to a Catholic, but it's harder for an atheist or a person with no faith to understand. So they're you know, distorting and they're criticizing. Some of it might just be because they don't understand.
Yeah, and how could she have done so many great things and yet still be struggling inside? See, the world responds to feelings, and you brought up a good point about, you know, the feelings not being the reality of what's going on, you know, in the depths of our soul. But the world does respond to feelings. You know, that whole saying, if it feels good, do it, is so true in our society.
Yeah.
And even in marriages today, if you don't feel like you're in love with your husband or your wife at a particular year or day or month, then the world will tell you, well, move on, you know, just move on and find somebody that makes you feel, you know, better. And that's the case that we have in the world. And yet here she is, you know, not giving in to those feelings, you know, where she felt some doubt and she struggled, and just continuing to do what she had to do, what she felt she was called to do by God.
Right. And love is a decision. Love isn't a feeling or just, oh, it feels so nice to be in love. You have to decide every day to continue to love your spouse and your family and the people around you, those people who may annoy you, those people who are cutting you off in traffic. We're called to love everyone. So it's a decision. We have to decide. Are we going to be holy? Are we going to follow God's will? Or are we just going to just do it if it feels good? And I think the feelings of doubt, that she pushed them aside. She...
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything that came negative within her, she had to feel it. She had to suffer through it, but she offered it to God, and she pushed away the negativity. And she's she was very well aware of the spiritual warfare. She knows, or she knew, the devil was tempts everyone. So the devil's going to put all these bad things in the way. You push them aside. You push them aside. You keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you keep keeping your eyes focused up toward God. And that's what she did. She never stopped doing that. So how could anyone say this woman lacked faith? That's absolutely ludicrous.
We're going to take a break, Donna. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about your book that was endorsed by Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta. You wrote the book a while ago, but it just was released, a beautiful book called Prayerfully Expecting. Then I want to read a quote, and this goes to the wisdom of the church. You know, of course, there's a lot of criticism, as usual, being thrown at the church. All the while, see, you know, the church tries to make her out to be a saint, yada, 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 and yet here she is. And yet, in her official biography from the Vatican, the church officials have been reflecting on her dark night of the soul for many, many years. There's a beautiful quote that I want to share with you and our listeners when we come back. And Donna, give us your website and also the address for the blog as well.
Okay, my website is www.donnacooperoboyle.com. So that would be DonnaCooperOboyle.com. I have two blogs. One is called Daily Donna Marie, A Dose of Inspiration. You can get through to that through the website, so this way I won't give you too many addresses. The other is called Embracing Motherhood. And so through the main website, you can find those two blogs. And
great stuff. Really, really beautiful website, and the blogs are very well done, too. Donna Marie Cooper-O'Boyle is a Catholic author and speaker, and we'll be back more to talk about her correspondence with Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta over the years, 22 letters, and also Mother took the time to endorse her book, which was just recently published. The book is called Prayerfully Expecting. We'll be right back. Fifty-one minutes past the hour now. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. My name is Teresa Tamayo. Good to be with you. And boy, what a great conversation we're having with author and speaker Donna Marie Cooper-O'Boyle, who knows an awful lot about Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta. She corresponded with her for many years, has 22 letters from her. And Blessed Mother Teresa endorsed one of her books, actually a brand new book that was just published, even though it was written quite a while ago, called Prayerfully Expecting. And Donna has another book coming out next year, which received the blessing of our late Holy Father John Paul II. So, sister, you are just blessed all over the place.
Well, the blessings are meant to be shared. Thank you. They're being passed on.
So I'm just really looking forward to your other book as well. And we were chatting before the break and then during the break about the fact that the church knows all about this and knew all about this. And, of course, the letters were released before she was beatified back in 2003. And there's this beautiful quote about her dark night of the soul that was released in her official biography from the Vatican. And I just wanted to read this and share this with our audience. When she was proclaimed blessed on October 19, 2003, I'm reading this from an article that I found on the Internet. These are the exact words printed in her official biography released by the Vatican. Quote, "There was an heroic side of this great woman that was revealed only after her death. Hidden from all eyes, hidden even from those closest to her, was her interior life marked by an experience of a deep, painful, and abiding feeling of being separated from God, even rejected by Him, along with an ever-increasing longing for His love. She called her inner experience the darkness, the painful night of her soul, which began around the time she started her work for the poor and continued to the end of her life. It led Mother Teresa to an ever more profound union with God. Through the darkness, she mystically participated in the thirst of Jesus, in his painful and burning longing for love, and she shared in the interior desolation of the poor." What a beautiful, I think, reflection on what we're talking about this morning.
Absolutely, and the Vatican knew all about this, you know, back then.
Let me ask you, in terms of, you mentioned something, in terms of seeing Christ in the poor. I think that's an important point, because in the work that my husband and I have done, volunteer work over the years at soup kitchens, or even when I was covering stories in the inner city of Detroit, which, you know, there were a lot of problems over the years in terms of homelessness and things like that, you really could see this loneliness and this brokenness in people. And my husband volunteers at a soup kitchen once a week in downtown Detroit, where he makes sandwiches for the inner city folks who are homeless. And he says it's so sad, because you can see the loneliness, and you try to, you know, comfort them, talk to them, whatever you can do. So that's what we're talking about here, that she was able to identify with that.
Oh, absolutely, because she believed Jesus was within each person, and she saw him in each person, and that's what she taught her sisters to do. And it's all through prayer, through her surrendering her will to God. And I've experienced that myself in the soup kitchens. It's great that your husband does that. I stayed with the Missionaries of Charity in Harlem one time. I have that in my new book next year coming out on Mother Teresa. and worked in the soup kitchen there, and that was amazing in Harlem, you know, seeing different gangs coming together at the same table to eat, and the power of prayer there. It was just amazing. And it would take probably volumes and volumes and volumes of books to ever really tell the life of Mother Teresa with the poor, because there are just so many stories each day of how she touched their lives and how she, through that, affected the entire world, opening our eyes to the poor, not just poor for lack of food, but poor for lack of love. And actually, that's what she calls us to do, to help those, yes, in the soup kitchens and all those who don't have enough to eat and who are broken because of abandonment. And but the real pain they have is not that hunger for that piece of bread, but that hunger for a loving touch. And mm-hmm. that's what she really impressed upon us, is that loving touch. And that's what she did so well. And that's because she allowed Jesus to live, to love through her, to live through her, and to love through her.
And, you know, I have a really good friend of mine who's a wonderful priest here in the Archdiocese of Detroit, Father John Ricardo, and he always says that, you know, discouragement is the devil's greatest tool.
Yeah.
And if he can put it out there and make it seem like Mother Teresa, you know, wasn't holy,
yeah.
boy, think about, you know, the advantage that he could have in discouraging people. That's why we have to use this
yeah.
as an opportunity to educate and uplift.
That's right, because then we would all give up and say, boy, if she didn't make it to heaven, forget it.
We never have a chance.
We're never going to make it. But we have to, yeah, you're right, educate, because a lot of people do not understand the uniting, you know, sufferings to Jesus, and that sufferings really are an important part of our spiritual growth. And so, you know, we have to realize that she suffered too. She wasn't this chosen one that was just filled with ecstasies in her mind of, you know, angelic songs caressing her ears. She was a person in the ditches, in the trenches, in the gutters with these people, and giving of herself. And she always said, give until it hurts. Don't give of your excess. She really was bothered by the fact that some rich people, she said, would just give expired food or extra clothes they didn't want, and big deal, it's like they were going to throw them away anyway. And
mm-hmm.
not that you shouldn't help, but to give until it hurt.
Absolutely. Donna, great talking with you. We have more time. Looking forward to having you on again soon for the Mom's Corner. Give us your website again before we wrap up.
Okay, www.donnacooperoboyle.com.
Great to talk to you again, and all the best with the new book and the one coming out next year, which I'm sure we'll talk about as well on the program. Everyone, have a great weekend, and good Lord willing, I'll talk to you on a Monday.